This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We usually tape in the offices of Raider, but today we're taping at my home. But I do want to thank Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of your home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Kyle Bacon, a Lafayette native and graduate of Lafayette High and UL Lafayette, is our guest today. Kyle graduated from LSU Law School and was on the Louisiana Law Review. He serves as head of Jones Walker's Lafayette office, which location is one of 13 offices the firm has across the country with over 360 lawyers. He is a co-leader of the firm's commercial transactions team, and his clients' interests include oil and gas, banking, real estate, healthcare, and manufacturing. In 2017, Kyle was selected as a top 20 under 40 leader by the Daily Advertiser, and he has participated in Leadership Louisiana and Leadership Lafayette. Active in Mardi Gras crews, he is also active with One Acadiana, the Community Foundation of Acadiana, and his church. We asked Kyle to join us today to discuss developments in downtown Lafayette, as well as today's commercial business client, and anything else you'd like to discuss, Kyle. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jane. Good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. What a day we're living in, right? I mean, this is crazy times. We're on Zoom, so thank you for putting up again with my learning curve on this.
Yeah, it is an unsettled time with the COVID pandemic going on. It's got a lot of changes in the world, in the community and in the legal community.
Right, right. Well, we met actually Anita Begno, who is in charge of all things going on in downtown Lafayette, encouraged me to meet with you, and you've been kind enough to spend time with me. And, you know, Jones Walker has got a reputation that's impeccable, and you've got a big presence in downtown Lafayette in Chase Tower. And I know that if we can talk first about maybe how you ended up there, and then we'll start talking about downtown and what you see. But I want you to get in your hometown background before we start that. So,
sure. Yeah. So like you said, I was born and raised here in Lafayette, Lafayette High graduate, 1996, Go Mighty Lions. Mm-hmm. Came through the ranks here and finished at UL undergrad, and then went on to LSU Law School. I clerked for a federal judge up in Alexandria for a year after law school. Uh-huh. And then I came back to practice with the former Perrette Dowies law firm here in Lafayette, which was in Chase Towers, as you mentioned. There was a period of time where I left and actually commuted to Baton Rouge, to a large law firm in Baton Rouge. And that's when I got into mostly the transactional side of the practice. Mm-hmm. While I was gone, the firm, the Jones Walker acquired a portion of the former Perrette Dowies law firm, Longman Russo, it was called at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I came back to work with that same group that I had left back in 2008. So when Jones Walker did that acquisition, Jones Walker's had a presence in Lafayette for probably 30 some odd years. In fact, Lafayette was the first office of Jones Walker outside of New Orleans. And so it's had a presence here for 30 some odd years. And then with that acquisition in 2009, I believe it was, the footprint here grew sizably. And we moved into the offices here in Chase Tower. And so we've been, I've been practicing out of downtown Lafayette for about 15 years or so now.
How do you find that's just a perfect location for a law firm? I worked in that building too. When I moved here, I joined a large law firm, and it's so convenient to the courthouse and everything you need, you know.
That's right. We have the state courthouse at our back door. The mm-hmm. federal courthouse is, I can see from my window here, and it's right around the corner, which is very convenient for the litigators. Downtown's got a city feel to it, and so it's a fun place to come and work. I find that I think downtown is sort of the epicenter of our cultural identity here in Lafayette and Acadiana, and I find it's the bridge perhaps between North Lafayette and or Upper Lafayette and South Lafayette. It's an important connector to the university. So downtown's an important part of Lafayette. It's critical that we keep downtown growing and vibrant. And we had a decision a few years ago as our lease was coming up whether we wanted to stay here, and we made a commitment to stay. I believe we have an office here of about 17 lawyers, and I believe we're the largest law firm or law office in downtown Lafayette. And like you said, we're on the top floor of the Chase Towers, which a lot of folks will remember as the old City Club.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Right. I agree. And I'm so glad you're on the show. You're so articulate about this without having a vested interest, you know, in running a group that promotes downtown Lafayette. But I think for me, you know, the civic work that I've done, I know that you've done, when people visit a town, they want to go downtown. They want to see people from out of town. They want to see what a downtown looks like. And with all of our traditional festivals and all the things that we have downtown alive, all the various, fun things that go on, downtown really is, I think, the core of our town. And while South Lafayette has a lot of offers, you know, a lot of amenities to offer and a lot of good things, downtown is really where it's at. And as you said, it's the bridge between the northern part of our parish and South Lafayette. So, I'm glad you guys decided to stay there.
Yeah, I think, you know, in one sense, you could say it's the front porch of mm-hmm. of our community. Mm-hmm. It's the place everybody knows from all different parts of Lafayette. Everybody knows downtown. And the cultural mix that you see here is sort of a great reflection of our community, and it showcased no better than during Festival International,
right,
where folks from all over our community, absolutely, but even all over the world, come and converge mm-hmm. downtown. And I think the festival is a great symbol of what downtown is all about. It's mm-hmm. it's the center of our community. It's a place where everybody is welcome, all walks of life, all parts of our community, and everyone feels comfortable. So mm-hmm. it's important to our community that we have a place like that where we can all come together and feel as one.
Right. I haven't heard that term front porch since I worked with Upper Lafayette Economic Development. Herb Schilling, you know, with Schilling Distributing, would use that, and his mantra was, this is what people see, you know, when they get off the interstate and come into town, our front porch. And that's a good way to put it. So
it's visible, mm-hmm. but it's also where we all come together mm-hmm. and hang out, right? I mean, if you go into neighborhoods with old style front porches, mm-hmm. neighbors would come and visit on front porches. And so in that respect too, downtown is where we can all come together and have a good community together as one.
Nicole, you went to Lafayette High. Did you live near downtown, or where did your family live?
We lived over, moved a couple of times, but lived off of Johnston Street near where Little Verrons is.
Yeah.
We lived on Normandy Road there, mm-hmm. a block over from Little Verrons. And so we lived back between, I guess, where at the time, Camellia was not there.
Right.
But between Camellia and, let's say, Brentwood in that area.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you've seen downtown grow and change from being kind of dormant to a lot of bars. And now the activity seems to be more push for residential and family-friendly, you know, activities. So
definitely. Yeah. I remember, you know, when I was in college, downtown was very dormant, like you said. I remember the first big bar that opened while I was in school was Amanda Scott's.
Oh.
that I remember. Mm-hmm. And that's been
fine establishment.
As I was leaving, UL, the college crowd started to shift from the old McKinley Street strip to downtown. And then you saw these bars open, like you mentioned. And you're right. We've got to get more residential down here. Mm-hmm. We need a resurgence of corporate tenants. There was a time when just about every law firm, lots of law firms were based downtown, and a lot have mm-hmm. left and gone out to River Ranch, Holly Saloon area, Pinhook, different areas. You know, I think that if you look at some other communities, I think about Baton Rouge and how its downtown has really mm-hmm. blossomed in the last 20 years or so. There was a time when Baton Rouge's downtown was pretty dormant and struggling itself. There were a lot of efforts that took place to rejuvenate the Baton Rouge downtown. But one that sticks out for me is that the state government made a decision to reconcentrate state offices in the downtown Baton Rouge area as opposed to other parts of Baton Rouge. And from my perspective, that spurred a lot of other developments that have followed since. I think, you know, our local government, obviously we don't have state government offices like Baton Rouge does, uh-huh. but I think our local government could play a role in that. To concentrate its facilities in the downtown area, which creates a higher demand for restaurants, higher demand for housing, those sorts of things. Our firm, Jones Walker in Baton Rouge, actually recently relocated from the I-10, I-12 corridor back into downtown Baton Rouge. And so you've seen that trend in Baton Rouge mm-hmm. where law firms are actually going back to downtown. And it would be great if we could create that synergy here in Lafayette. We've got some strong signs on the horizon. We've got the grocery store that recently opened up, which is important for the lifeblood mm-hmm. of downtown. I know there's a couple of residential complexes that are in the works, and so that's important. Mm-hmm. But we need to get some stronger corporate client tenant base as well. And one interesting thing I think is going to be how COVID changes some of that. Nowadays, a lot of people are working from home rather than in their offices. As it stands right now, we've got firm-wide, I think we have over half of our personnel are still working remotely from home. We have the option to come into the office or work from home, and over half of our personnel are still working from home. And one of the interesting things I think going forward in the real estate world is going to be, you know, what does that have a lasting impact on the way people work? Do people mm-hmm. continue to work from home even after COVID subsides? And what does that do for the demand for office spaces?
Right.
That's something downtown as well as other areas of Lafayette are going to have to think about and consider. You know, do we see a drop in office space mm-hmm. demand? Some folks are projecting that we may actually see that. So there's challenges. There's plenty of opportunities for downtown, but it's mm-hmm. also got challenges that we need to focus on.
Yeah, boy, your talk has spurred several thoughts for me. First of all, my current podcast guest that's out right now, Eric Knezik, who's a local entrepreneur, he was saying it. He thinks the real estate market is just going to be so different. You know, people are really going to look at how much physical concrete do they need to occupy versus creativity, as you're talking about. And in interviewing David Callicott of Lafayette General this week, he was saying he wonders, you know, are we going to move forward interacting in a different way, more like they do in Asia, wearing masks more, being more aware of proximity to others? So there's so many unknowns that we don't know. But I do know that two government entities have invested in downtown Lafayette recently, and I do want to mention that, Kyle, the Opportunity Machine, you know, under Lafayette Economic Development Authority, has got space downtown that's going to be refurbished. And also Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission, Ben Berthelot's office, has got space. So I think we've got some buy-in from both private and public, but how we move forward is going to be really interesting in the next year or two. So,
yeah, I think, and those developments like that are very important because they can, mm-hmm. they can spur additional activity.
Right.
And those are the types of things that we need, those sort of public sector organizations mm-hmm. to be aware of and to, you know, to identify places downtown where they can right. make an upgrade out of, because other folks will follow. We're still, even though we're somewhat isolated now as in this pandemic mode, people are still we're social beings.
I know. I'd rather be in person with you than sitting here looking at the computer, you know.
But we like to be around other folks. That's why you mm-hmm. see places like these traditional neighborhood developments like River Ranch have done so mm-hmm. well. Like, it's because mm-hmm. It gives people an opportunity to interact and socialize with each other. Right. And downtown settings have similar characteristics. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's plenty of potential for downtown.
What are you seeing right now? I know are you in your office or are you at home right now?
I am in my office.
Okay. I know you're up, you can see everything. You've got a beautiful office space in Chase Tower. What are you seeing downtown? Is activity coming back? Like what does it look like? Streets, parking, people?
It seems to change by the week, maybe even by the day, depending mm-hmm. on what's happening with the cases, the pandemic. When things hit early on, and it was a stay-at-home orders, it was a little eerie down here, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
There was nobody here. It was almost like a Sunday afternoon every day mm-hmm. of the week. Then towards probably May or June, people started, you know, coming back, but the restaurants were not fully open. It was hard to find a place to eat. Most of them were still at takeout service level. And then it picked up more. And then with this spike that we've had the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. a lot of people have, I think, stayed away and hunkered down more. And so it's quieter than it used to
be. Yeah. I was hoping we could have taped this in person, and we probably could have, you know, Chris Rader and his company, Rader Solutions, helped me with the show, and they've set up a special place for me. But with the latest spike, I just thought it'd be safest just to go ahead and, you know, do it remotely, just so I'm not asking guests to do something they're not comfortable with. But when I came to meet with you a couple of months ago in your office, they checked my temperature, you know, gave me a mask, and we sat in a conference room across from each other, if you remember, with a lot of the seats taped off.
That's
right. You guys have been really, you've got it. Like you're taking care of the people distance.
That's right. Our firm was really came out of the gate strong on that from the very beginning. We've got some strong ties to the healthcare community within our mm-hmm. firm. And our firm has a long history of dealing with crises. Being home-based in New Orleans.
BP,
BP and Katrina, you know, our firm learned so much through mm-hmm. being a New Orleans-based firm. We learned so much through Katrina. And our infrastructure was set up largely because of what the lessons we learned from Katrina was set up to be able to function remotely. And so when this pandemic hit, It was a pretty seamless transition for us. The biggest obstacle we had, all the lawyers were already set up to work remotely. Uh-huh. the staff, we had to get the staff, secretaries, paralegals.
Yeah.
We had to get them set up with laptops, and we had to get more remote access accounts, licenses. But once we did that, it was pretty smooth sailing. On the precautions within the protocols within the office, we also, this firm came out of the gate strong on that from the outset as well. Mm-hmm. And we had a questionnaire early on which is sort of now becoming commonplace, but we had it very early on where there was a questionnaire that each one of us has to answer before we come into the office each morning. Every day. That's right. Anybody who comes into our office.
I had to answer that. Yeah.
That's right. But attorneys, staff, anybody that comes in has to answer it. We get a text on our phone every morning and an email as well. And there's a nurse that takes our temperature as we enter the office space. Mm-hmm. And so it's to check for things, you know, for exposure items and to make sure that we're not exhibiting any symptoms. And if we are, we have to stay away for a period of time.
Right.
And you're right. In the conference rooms, we have the conference room set up. We've continued to service our clients. We haven't missed a beat with servicing our clients. And so that was important to us to be able to service our clients remotely. And sometimes it's got to be in the office. For example, depositions continued to take place even while the courthouses were closed. Mm-hmm. Some of those got postponed, but we still did have some activity of in-office meetings and depositions and such. And so for social distancing, we taped off chairs and we've created maximum capacity in rooms, which are just a percentage of what we normally would have in a conference room setting. And you're right, every visitor is required to answer the same type of questionnaire and to take their temperature. And, and masks are strongly encouraged throughout all the public areas. And we're seeing pretty much everyone these days they're wearing masks throughout the office when they're not in their own
right.
office
area. Right. I know for large firms like yours, you've got the resources to kind of think ahead. And a lot of our legal community has really had to get up to speed with technology. You know, my husband's firm is small compared to yours, and they weren't really set up for remote working, but they did that very quickly. And thank goodness for our local IT people that can help set up secure connections. And I think for some of the older crowd, the biggest concern was, will our workers be productive? You know, because they're used to seeing people every day. And a lot of younger workers can do this remotely, but it's been a transition for the legal community.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see how it has unfolded. And some folks still are not coming into the office, attorneys included, and they're working from home. Sometimes some folks decided they liked working from home better. And so that'll be interesting to see, you know, how that, like you mentioned earlier, how does that change?
Yeah, I'm curious about golden cleaners, like, you know, how many suits are being dry cleaned these days? I'll get a buddy on and ask him.
Right. Our dry cleaners, I know they saw a downtick.
Yeah.
It was They were nervous for a while. I think in conversations with our dry cleaner, it sounds like it's picking up. But
good. But that's a good thing.
And it's interesting how this pandemic has affected different businesses differently. You know, we've got some clients that are really booming right now because of their industry and what they do.
Like what?
Healthcare facilities. And that's a mixed bag right there. When I say healthcare facilities is really the wrong word. Healthcare support companies. Some of those are doing really well. You think about people that sell ventilators or masks. Mm-hmm. Their sales are up.
Cleaning companies, people that sanitize facilities.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. So. Some clients like that are doing really well. Obviously, other clients are not. Oil and gas, energy sector, it's taken a real big hit, especially around here. It's sort of a mixed bag, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out long term.
Right. Kyle, I want to follow up on that thought, but first I'd like to pause for Discover Lafayette's Past, which is something we do in every episode. It's brought to us by Rally Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist people with marketing information, content development, search engine optimization, and how to use social media as a moneymaker for businesses. Our friends at Raleigh Marketing are there to help you navigate the maze of all the latest ways to market online effectively. For more information, please visit RaleighMarketing.com. And now the moment, and I wanted to focus on the history of the Lafayette Parish Bar Association, which we're all members of. In 1969, what had been a loosely knit, informal group of attorneys formalized into the Lafayette Parish Bar Association by the filing of a charter signed by all 83 lawyers who practiced in the parish. Can you imagine? 83 lawyers. In 5 years, the membership had almost doubled to 151 members. The first record of formal volunteerism for the indigent of Lafayette Parish was the establishment of the Pro Bono Committee in 1985. By 1987, with the assistance of Acadiana Legal Services, the Lafayette Volunteer Lawyers Program became a reality, and the Lafayette Bar hired its first staff member. The association was first located in the old Moss Pharmacy building, which was downtown at the corner of Jefferson and Vermilion, right by your office. In January 1991, the association moved to larger headquarters in what was then the F&B Towers, now Chase Tower, a space suitable to accommodate the law library for local lawyers and three staff members. In 2007, the Lafayette Parish Bar Foundation purchased and began renovations of its current building on Johnson Street across from Albertsons. This facility today contains six conference rooms, the law library, and is open to the public who might be in need of legal forms when they represent themselves in divorce matters or other common legal matters. So that's a brief history. That's been 51 years of growth. And you know, now I don't even know how many lawyers we have in Lafayette Parish, more than 151.
Absolutely. guessing to say, but it's several, many, many hundred, I believe.
Yeah. My husband is president of the Bar Foundation. I know they're honoring a lot of people coming up. We're waiting, having to put off events where we normally honor the stars in our community, but the bar does a lot of good for our community, and people give lawyers give back a lot of volunteer hours.
That's right.
Those in need.
It's a great organization. And I had the pleasure of serving on the board of directors for the Bar Association for a few years while I was chair of the commercial transactions section. And you're right. Lawyers a lot of times can get a bad rap in the world today, but there's a lot of pro bono work that lawyers do, and a lot of good service oriented work, and the bar associations on the front line with regard to that. I remember when the bar association was here in our building as a new lawyer, I was probably one of their frequent users of the library there.
So oh yeah, it's great.
Yeah, they got to see me a lot down there.
And it was quiet, so you could go get out of your office and just get some work done, you know, get some research done.
Right. That's right.
So if we can go back to what you were talking about before that pause, what are you seeing? I know that you've been involved in things. I know you guys do national and international work. What's the word about commercial entities? You were saying earlier that some are doing well, depending on the sector they're in. Oil and gas, not so well. Healthcare support, maybe better, but what is the word, and maybe how it's affected the legal community too, if you can touch on some of that?
I mean, I think one of the biggest impacts that we saw very quickly was the merger and acquisition work came to almost a screeching halt because there was so much nervousness about and uncertainty about what the future would hold with the pandemic.
And that's a big part of what you do, right?
That's right.
Yeah, your focus.
And so a lot of that slowed down. So from the legal side of things, sometimes it generates other activity though. For example, bankruptcies are going up, which is not a great thing. We'd rather see companies grow and prosper. But there is a need for for legal services when it comes to those types mm-hmm. of matters.
You help them work out, like in advance when they go to their creditors, you help them organize a proposal in many cases, I'm sure.
Right.
Because they don't want to totally default. They want to work out something.
Work out arrangements. And then mm-hmm. there's also advising and representing through the bankruptcy process. Mm-hmm. There, you know, and this wasn't, as folks around the Acadiana area are well aware, we were already in sort of a downturn in the oil and gas sector. So it wasn't a new thing. But what we've, you know, one of the things that you see is, for example, when companies are in distress, they look for other mechanisms, alternative financing mechanisms. So, you know, it may be collateralizing assets to generate a revenue stream that maybe weren't collateralized previously. That can generate, you know, legal work as well. You know, I've got an interesting development of late where it was an oil and gas service company and they sold last year. And then this pandemic hit and everything sort of dried up. And they're actually in the process of buying their company back.
Really?
from the buyer, right.
Yeah. To save it, probably to.
Yeah, right. Well, right. And so it basically didn't materialize as promising, you know, didn't materialize as well as the buyer thought. And so the parties have reached an agreement to basically repurchase the division from the buyer. So those types of things are happening. But I do think, you know, Louisiana's going to have a challenge going forward in the energy sector. We've got, and these things were in place before the pandemic. But we've got sort of some issues in maybe a liability climate that a lot of energy companies are looking to other jurisdictions, and so that's something Louisiana, and it hits Lafayette hard because of our emphasis on oil and gas. That's something we need to think about as a community and as economic developers. We need to think through those issues. It's a challenge going forward. It's sort of a mixed bag when it comes to what the clients are experiencing right now through the pandemic. Clearly, a lot of folks are really, really hitting them hard. Bars and restaurants and folks like that are probably on the forefront. One of the things we saw early on is landlord and tenant issues. Mm-hmm. That's going to continue to be an issue.
That's about to hit the fan, I think.
That's right.
Late August, that's going to hit the fan.
And these are, I mean, residential is going to be a problem. Residential leases is going to be a problem, but commercial leases are also a problem. We've had several clients that have looked into, you know, getting out of their lease arrangements or renegotiating lease arrangements. Mm-hmm. And the longer the pandemic goes, I think the more that's going to become an issue. And there's been we were able to help a lot of clients get, you know, postponements and forbearance agreements with landlords and things like that. And I think time will tell as to whether that is the, you know, whether that's the end game with regard to mm-hmm. the negotiations and those types of things.
Your clients are lucky to have your legal counsel. I'm certain that a lot of people that don't have legal counsel that are defaulting on obligations, they're afraid to talk to their creditors. And that's the worst thing they can do, is stay silent, you know, and not try to work out something.
Yeah, every situation is different. You know, I think a lot of people get locked by fear as well. And one of the things that folks can take comfort in is that there's legal processes in place to prevent, particularly in Louisiana, that generally prevent someone from getting, quote, you know, kicked out to the street overnight. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're right. I think it's better to deal with the situation and figure out a solution than to sort of ignore it and then all of a sudden mm-hmm. you have an eviction suit on your hands or something like that.
Yeah, you've defaulted and don't have a leg to stand on. Who Y'all represent big companies. Do you, do regular people walk in off the street looking for advice, or what's your typical client?
Yeah, our typical client is, we do represent a lot of big companies, but we also represent mid-sized companies. We're a commercial firm, so we're a business defense firm. So, mm-hmm. you know, 90% of our client base is businesses. And so some of those are mid-sized, some of them are large. And particularly in the Lafayette market, we tend to represent a lot of mid-sized companies as well.
What does that mean, Kyle? What is mid-size? Like what revenue stream or whatever?
I don't have a specific dollar marking on it. I guess I would distinguish it from, say, mom and pop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you
like
think
a husband and wife deal, as opposed to maybe a 5-employee company.
That's right. And some of our clients,
services.
Right. And some of our clients we represent for specific issues. Right. They may mm-hmm. have general counsel, an attorney that they use on just sort of regular ordinary things. But then there may be come an issue that pops up to where they need a specific resource. For example, I've got one client that needed Texas counsel because of a contract dispute related to, it was a Texas governing law issue. And so we were able to pull in our partners from our Texas office. I've got a client as well that had Texas counsel, but is interested in filing a lien in Louisiana. So they needed our resources for that. We've got a strong intellectual property group here in Lafayette. We've got a strong labor and employment group within the firm. We've got a strong healthcare group. So, you know, not every lawyer, no lawyer knows everything, right? So,
right.
No,
yeah. So, is that true?
Right. And so a lot, sometimes we get clients that will help on specific type issues, subject matter type issues, depending on what their needs are and what our resources we have to offer.
Yeah. Well, your firm has just got such a great reputation. And I want to shout out one of our oldest friends is Michael Lemoyne, who's in your office.
That's right.
John, my husband, lived with Michael, and we just love him to death. Gary Russo, Ian McDonald, Doug Longman. You've got a great group of solid people there. And I'm not even, there's so many that I don't know, but I wanted to shout out to those names I know. And I'd like to transition before we close out the interview. I know that you have a beautiful family and you're active in your church and you're also active in Mardi Gras and a lot of things in our community. If you could touch on some of that. I was surprised at how many things you do with Mardi Gras. You're active with that, right? Gabriel Bonaparte and the children's.
We like Mardi Gras at home. Our kids are in a crew. Like you said, my wife and I are in the crew of Bonaparte and I'm in the crew of Gabriel, and recently appointed to the board for the crew of Bonaparte.
Oh, good.
And so it's a fun time for our family and we enjoy it. It's one of the unique cultural aspects of Lafayette in Acadiana. And so I always enjoyed Mardi Gras growing up, but my wife and I also sort of made a decision at early on when our kids were young, that we were going to sort of, you know, let them experience that, mm-hmm. that cultural piece as well. Part of my theory is if we can get them, you know, you can make a gumbo anywhere around the world. You can listen to Cajun music anywhere you go, but you can't export Mardi Gras. So
I love that. That's yeah.
if they love Mardi Gras, they'll have to come back at least once a year. If they move away, or maybe that'll get them to stay. So
yeah,
so we enjoy it. But you're right. I've been involved. I've been president of the UL Alumni Association, and that was a great experience.
What an honor! Yeah,
it was a fun experience with a great board over there and a great group of great staff. Mm-hmm. And that was some exciting things we were able to work on. I've been involved in One Acadiana, like you mentioned.
With the Urban Revitalization Committee, right?
I serve on that committee. Mm-hmm. And so that committee is about focusing a lot of what we're talking about today, which is how do you revitalize the urban core of our community? Because it does take nurturing. It may not happen naturally. It takes some concerted effort. And so that we spend time thinking through issues affecting the downtown area and other urban core areas like university area and things like that.
Right.
I'm on the executive advisory committee for the College of Business at UL.
Yeah. So
that's been fun to be a part of.
And on the search committee, right, for the new dean.
Well, we just finished a search. That's mm-hmm. right. On the search committee for the new dean. We just wrapped that up.
Congratulations on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you're right. We're active in our church parish, St. Pius Catholic Church here in town. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things are quality of life things for our community, for our family, and so we try to stay engaged and get as much out of Lafayette as we can.
Right. Well, we're so blessed to have you in our community, and I'm honored that I'm getting to know you, Kyle. I mean, I knew who you were, but I don't think we'd ever really interacted, and you kind of touch a lot of our community through your work, both as a lawyer and volunteer, civically engaged. So thank you for all you do, and I hope that people that don't know you will take this interview and see that all of us have something to offer to make our community great. And I really believe Lafayette Parish and our region is a wonderful place to live, and you've contributed greatly to that. So thank you for taking time today.
Kind of you to say.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our listeners. Please share this interview. You can do a couple of things. You can go to discoverlafayette.net. You could find Kyle's interview and the web notes, and you can share that with friends, or you can even go to your podcast app and please subscribe. You just have to type in Discover Lafayette, and a new podcast will be delivered every week to your phone. There's no charge for this. This is made possible through the generosity of our sponsors, Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, Raider, and Rally Marketing. I want to thank all of them for making the podcast possible. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.